Hi, this is John Mulder, Executive Director of the Trillium Institute, along with Jason Beckrow, welcoming you to Palliative Matters. We are palliative doctors who treat patients and families who are dealing with difficult medical journeys, and we'd like to share what we've learned along the way. How are you doing today, Dr. J?
I'm doing fantastic, John. How are you today?
You know, I'm doing well. It's a beautiful day, and I get to chat with you about fun and interesting things, and that's always a joy for me, so I appreciate this opportunity today.
As do I. Always a joy to see what we'll explore today and where things will take us.
Yeah, it's always kind of fun since we don't always script these things out. In fact, usually we don't. There's a lot of uncertainty in where this goes, and in fact, I think that might be an interesting thing for us to explore today, the topic of uncertainty. I know that the deeper we get into the care of our patients and the more connected we get with them relationally, the more we become aware of the level of uncertainty that exists within the field of medicine. Would you not agree with that?
Oh, 100%, John. And in fact, that's oftentimes where we're asked to kind of, you know, lean in with our patients. You know, I think of that concept of meet them where they're at. And again, within that, there's a desire for very certain, very specific answers. But most of the time, it's how do we operate in the realm of possibilities, both good and bad. And within that, as you say, a lot of uncertainty. So I would love to explore that with you.
Well, let's chat a little bit about that. You know, we do deal with uncertainty in our patients all the time. And we may sit down with them and try to explain to them what the natural course of this disease might be.
Sure.
But the reality is that we don't know what kind of twists and turns they might take. Not everybody has read the textbook. And so whether it be a cancer or a non-cancer diagnosis such as congestive heart failure, COPD, we don't exactly know how it's going to progress for an individual patient. Mm-hmm. We can outline the general trend that they might experience these types of symptoms, these types of circumstances. There may be hospitalizations involved. In the case of cancer, there might be various treatment modalities, but how they're going to respond, we don't know. And yet the patients want that in many circumstances. And how often have we gotten the question either from the patient or from the family, well, so how much longer do you think I got, Doc?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the answer is we don't know. We can couch it in terms of days to weeks to months, months to years, but we don't know the time of the day that life will end for anybody. So we have to figure out how we're going to manage their expectations and ours in the midst of that. So I guess I'd start out with a question for you.
Sure.
How do we prepare for what we expect to happen in the midst of all of that uncertainty? Have you had any thoughts about that or ideas or scenarios that you've encountered with patients?
The short answer is absolutely. I think it's something we experience and think about probably practically on a daily basis, and we'll spend the entirety of our careers trying to answer those types of questions. As you were talking there, John, something I wrote down here, and I think it's really important, the concept of managing expectations. And I'll loop back to that, I think, periodically through our conversation here. Because within that, like you say, you'll be with the patient. There's probably some family members at the bedside. Maybe some are on a phone. Maybe some live far away. And that question is posed to you. How much time do we have left? Or maybe a little differently, do I need to get my affairs in order? Or some sort of a question with that meta message asking about time and prognosis. And yeah, to your point, it's practically impossible to give a specific date, time, and so people can put that into their Outlook calendar with a 15-minute window. But I think oftentimes there is kind of a general message that they are asking, and I think we agree that it's important for us to be as direct and answer that as succinctly as we can, and to your point, factoring in the uncertainty. For example, so let's start with, we've got a patient with a metastatic cancer diagnosis. They've now stopped eating. They have not been out of bed for several days. their performance status is now maybe somewhere like a palliative performance status of 30, 20% and trending down. And you're asked that question, and you know, most likely this person probably does not have years to live, probably does not have months to live, may not have a week to live. So like you say, we tend to hedge, could be hours to days, days to weeks. Within that, that purposely allows for that uncertainty. And then I'll oftentimes talk about, you know, what's most likely. I'll encourage the loved ones around that patient to prepare for that, what's most likely, especially if time may be short. Because once they've done that, now they can hope for and start to think about what are the unexpected. You know, maybe what looks like hours to days now could turn into days to weeks later. And from time to time, we'll just see things that we can't explain scientifically. When you can't explain something scientifically, then it just seems to be more in the realm of the miraculous. So we want to prepare for what's most likely. I think our patients want to know that we're factoring in and preparing for having contingencies for uncertainty. Once we've done those things, once we're prepared for all scenarios, now we can hope and pray for something more than miraculous.
One of the things I like about that approach, and we've talked about it before, and I think it bears mentioning again, one of the things that is most powerful in the care that we provide to our patients who are in this particular situation, who are facing the reality of death, is to build this trusting relationship with them. And if we're throwing a bunch of medical facts at them, probabilities and statistics and percentages and things of that sort, that can cause some fear, that can cause some confusion. But I think that if we take the time to develop this relationship, to develop a trusting relationship, then we can be very honest about the reality, you know, what's expected. We know what's going to happen at the end with this particular type of disease or this particular type of a clinical scenario. We know death is on the horizon. We may not know exactly when, but here's what we know is going to happen, the sequence of events that may happen, and they will happen in the time that it takes for it to happen that we may not be able to predict. And I think that level of honesty goes a long way in terms of someone saying, I'll ride this out with you, and I will trust you. And I believe that there is not a direct number that you can give, but if they're walking with me, then I can rely on that relationship to help to sustain me through.
That's a really good point, John. And maybe you use the word trust, because like you say, once the patients and their families trust that you're going to be with them through the ups and downs, that they're not going to be abandoned, now they can be maybe a little more comfortable knowing that there are some uncertainties, but whatever that is, we'll be there with them and for them. That is, again, a very honored space that we are invited into on a regular basis, and the opportunity to be with patients at that critical time and their families. Like you say, once you've established that connection, to be able to talk about the uncertainties, what's expected, what's less likely, let's have all contingency plan for all scenarios, that can be a very warm space so that if things do go, quote unquote, not according to plan, well, we're still with you. We're still here. And it does allow us, there are some guarantees we can make, and we can probably hit on those a little bit later.
Yeah. And I think that the important thing is that you talk about the approach that we might take to a variety of contingencies. We've talked a little bit about how do we prepare for the expected, but the converse of that is how do we prepare for the unexpected?
Yes.
Because we can't anticipate every potential complication. We can't anticipate every potential left turn. All of us are aware of how Murphy's Law comes into effect in many aspects of life, not the least of which is healthcare. And so you may plan, but Murphy's Law would take us in an entirely different direction that we didn't think about.
Yes.
And those things will happen in medicine, and especially at end of life, all the time. And so the preparation for the unexpected is very similar to how do you prepare for the expected. You develop a trusting relationship, and you have open and honest conversations, and hope that those will be able to carry you through the day.
Yeah. I will oftentimes proactively talk about less likely scenarios. Some guarantees I do give the patient. One, that we are going to care for your loved one as though they were a member of our own family.
Absolutely.
And be there for them, come what may. Two, that we will do all medically possible to reduce and eliminate any physical pain and unnecessary suffering. So with those two things, that's how we set the foundation to build that trusting relationship. And then lastly, I will talk about the unlikely but occasional medical conditions that may occur. Seizure activity, bleeding. So here's where I oftentimes will start to celebrate and talk about the team I work with, that they are trained to see minor changes, small items, almost use their sixth clinical sense, as it were, to predict the future. And then explain to the family that we have standing orders, that the nurses have all the tools that they need. And I'm, as the physician, not far away, that they can act on that. And that is proactively letting them know that sometimes things unexpected may pop up. We have seen many of them before. We have plans in place, medications on standby, and they'll be executed when needed. Another way to try to build trust, again, in these unlikely scenarios that we have some plans for. And if they come to be, we've prepared them with our words. And if they don't, hopefully we've built their confidence knowing that we are prepared.
Right. So I think that one of the things we also have to acknowledge is that although we, with our fount of knowledge that we have and our understanding about disease processes, our intimate understanding about death and dying and how we approach that, the reality is that sometimes, maybe oftentimes, we're wrong. We didn't make the right call. We couldn't predict some things that happened, or the things that we predicted might happen didn't. I remember years ago, I had a patient, a woman with end-stage COPD, was admitted to our inpatient hospice unit, and she became quite hypoxic. Her SATs were down to the 60s. She became a hypopnea. She was breathing just a half a dozen times a minute. She was unresponsive. Urine output had dropped. Vital signs were changing. And we thought, as expected, this is it. We called the family in. They came in the middle of the night and they sat by the bedside. And as mom lingered for the next few hours, then she woke up and wondered why all these people were around her bedside. Well, we really couldn't predict that that was going to happen, because everything that we know about the changes in vital signs and such and the progression of this disease would have suggested that this was an irreversible process. So we were able to have a chuckle, celebrate the fact that we were wrong, that mom's not ready to go yet. And she did that two more times before she did it for the last and final time. But by the third time, the family saying, well, how do we know if this is really it or not? And I said, I don't know. I guess if she wakes up or not, we'll know. But we had established the relationship with the family that allowed them to be able to live in this realm of uncertainty and be okay with it because of the strength of the team around her and around them. And knowing that even in the midst of all these different changes, mom was comfortable and she was being well cared for.
I get a sense they felt, just like you said there, that they were in a safe space, they were well cared for, come what may, that their loved one, you know, was not going to unnecessarily suffer. And you kind of helped set that up. That goes back to that concept of managing expectations. The first go round, if you are in fact right that time is short, and you encourage the family, if you're going to come, come now, don't wait till later, because there may not be a later. You've helped manage those expectations. And then if we're wrong, I say all the time in my practice, if we're prepared for all scenarios, if I've helped, you know, manage your expectations in that fashion, we're prepared for the worst case scenario. In our business, I love to be wrong. If I tell you that it's quite likely that time is short, and that turns out not to be, and the patient lives, you know, in my practice, I have some patients that were diagnosed with an advanced cancer that years ago, we had to have a conversation where they need to be prepared that mathematically they may only have months to live. And again, in the realm of the miraculous, I'm very pleased to say that there are many patients that prognosis has been wrong. But by doing it that way, that's a good thing. And sure, for you being proactive, supporting your family, having them prepared, now they can see multiple iterations of that. But again, know that when the time comes, they've been well cared for.
So let's talk about the, because this is the second time you mentioned the miraculous, and I think it bears just giving some attention to that. I think about oftentimes the miraculous and the mystery, two of my favorite M words there, because there's a lot that we don't know, and that's kind of the mystery. And the miraculous, I sort of think of as a situation for which we have no explanation other than divine intervention. You know, for example, someone will encounter in your previous life in oncology, you have someone that comes in and they choose a treatment course which has a very, very poor chance of helping. And, you know, the stats and the science would suggest maybe a 10, 12, 15% chance of response, overwhelmingly likely not. And they do respond. And people say it's a miracle. No, it's really not a miracle. That was the expectation that we had going in. We just didn't have the probability very high that it was going to work, but it did. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really consider that miraculous. I find that is just kind of the mystery of science. Why do some people respond and some people don't? I don't know, but we have an expectation that somebody will, but not everybody does.
Sure.
You know, I've had folks that have had cancers, biopsy proven, and they're entering into the hospice realm, and some months later, they're not acting like they should with that particular type of a disease. And you do the repeat scans and you find out that the cancer's gone.
Yeah.
Now, is there an explanation for that medically? If they've had no treatments, I don't have an explanation. I would probably consider that to be a miraculous sort of a situation, which we could not have predicted, which we might have hoped for, prayed for, and dreamt about. And here it is.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you prepare for those types of situations, other than just to celebrate them when they come. The challenge, I think, is that there are some people who are living with disease processes for which there is not the possibility of any kind of reversal. We expect progression. And their hope, their prayers, are that it will somehow be miraculously cured. And they put all their eggs in that basket.
Sure.
And that yields an element of frustration, disappointment. Depending upon where they're lying theologically, it might make them angry with God for not answering their prayers, or they might feel abandoned. All of those things come into play. In that particular case, we have an understanding of certainty about what the natural disease process is. They have a different perspective that God might have the capacity for miraculously healing, but he doesn't.
Yeah.
And that becomes very, very challenging, I think, for some families. My approach to that has always been, you know, I believe that that is on the table, but I got to tell you, that happens very, very infrequently. I don't see it very often in my work as a physician. And the natural progression that really is built around the laws of nature and laws of physics and the laws of biology that God developed would suggest that we're going in this direction. And so I think that we prepare for that. And we anticipate that so that you don't have to suffer as a result of what the expected progression will be. And if something happens to intervene there, be it mysterious or miraculous, we'll all celebrate together.
Yeah. In that, again, you're helping prepare for what's most likely. You're preparing for those uncommon but known, we'll call them side effect type situations. You've got plans for all of those. And then and only then, once you've helped manage those expectations, prepare for what's most likely and some of the lesser uncertainties, Now we can hope and pray for that miraculous turnaround by simply acknowledging that that's possible. But again, this is very important. I think focusing on the fact that it's possible, but highly unlikely, it keeps the door open, that trusting relationship that we're working on with our families. In so doing, it also allows the opportunity to ask, what does a miracle look like to you? Because the reality is, miracles come in many forms, and we do see certain things on a regular basis. A person coming to peace with their terminal condition, getting closure at the end of life. We see families that may have been torn apart, estranged, lots of pain throughout the years, make peace at the end of life. Those things can be considered or held up as potential miracles as well, and to be celebrated. So
I agree.
This goes back to your concept of managing those expectations and opening up for the possibility, be it likely or unlikely. If you're prepared for all scenarios, some really cool things can occur.
So as physicians and scientists who are trained in Western medical philosophy, we're sort of ingrained with the reality that science is certain, right? And yet here we are in the midst of a specialty which is steeped in uncertainty. So let me ask a personal question, Jay.
Sure.
How do you personally manage and deal with the fact that uncertainty swirls around you professionally, personally,
yeah,
and in the lives of your patients?
Yeah, that is a great question. And I'm grateful I've had some time to think about that, because it really goes back to some simple things my parents taught me, which is basically do your best. Do the best you can with the information you have. It is humbling. And as we get along in our practice, it becomes more and more humbling. So we start off with everything we think we know. We need to lead with that could be wrong or found to be either wrong, or maybe there's a better practice that we'll discover down the road. So start with that premise. Then you do the best with the information you have. As you get more comfortable with those items, then you can be even more vulnerable with your patients and being honest. Here's what I think is most likely. Here's what I've seen. 9 times out of 10, patients in this circumstance will experience X. But I then also have seen, you know, here's some of these other things. I want you to know that everything that we've experienced before, we have contingencies. I need you prepared that time could be short. If you are prepared now, you are prepared to now hope for things other than that. Whether or not you call it a miracle or just a scientific phenomenon that we can't explain yet, you know, whatever that may be. But how I think I deal with that is, again, simple but profound advice that my parents gave me. Simply do the best you can with the information you have and be open to learning more at any given time.
I like that. I've had a couple of interesting, perhaps odd medical circumstances that have occurred in my life that have yielded a fair amount of uncertainty. And as I've navigated those, I've really come to the conclusion that within every day that we're fortunate to stay alive, mm-hmm, to be above the ground, there's an opportunity for us to experience gratitude,
mm-hmm,
peace, joy, that we can find blessings in the world around us and in the people around us, and we can be a blessing to people around us. It doesn't really matter what our current state is. We might be ill, but we can still find those blessings and we can still find that joy. As you know, and some of the listeners may know, that I've dabbled in songwriting from time to time, and mm-hmm, during one of my particular medical challenges, I was doing a fair amount of songwriting, and it's a way of chronicling my experiences. And in one of the songs, I wrote this line, "And at that moment when joy and sorrow meet, joy wins." And we've tried to hang on to that as our kind of our mantra as a family, knowing that it doesn't matter what has faced us, joy wins. And we have the opportunity to find that. Now, as we help our patients and families navigate that, sometimes it's very, very hard because they can't see beyond the reality that they're sick and that they're potentially dying and that life is short. And how do we help them navigate that? It's really easy and maybe trite to say, well, joy wins. But to help them find that opportunity for joy and peace. And I do that with questions that we've chatted about before, and we don't need to go in detail, but it really gets to that point about what is important and sacred to you. Where do you find your joy? Where do you find your peace? Because even if people are not experiencing, they can typically answer the question, and then we have the opportunity to help in both the navigation and creating the platform through which they may be able to experience that.
Beautifully said, John. And again, that's why, as you asked me at the beginning of the conversation here, I said I just always love this opportunity to think about these topics with you, because what you emanate there, that light, there's this great saying, be kind, for everyone is facing a great battle.
Yes.
As we're facing that great battle, it's also a great opportunity. And the fact that we're even here can be seen as a miracle in and of itself. That's probably another podcast for a philosophy conversation. But weaving in that to our practice, helping our patients see those things to be grateful for. And when you see that fully realized, even in the midst of a dying loved one with tears of gratitude, you mentioned gratitude. What an important, powerful word. Joy wins and gratitude.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Palliative Matters. Please join us for additional episodes and feel free to share with others. If there are topics of interest you'd like to hear or stories you think would be interesting to share, please contact us through our website, TrilliumInstitute.org. Till then, have a wonderful day.